Support for St. Louis Public Radio comes from The Rep, kicking off its new season with Dial M for Murder. High suspense unravels on The Rep stage as a murder plot spirals into chaos. Dial M for Murder opens September 18th. Tickets at repstl.org.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.
The end of the Missouri primary in early August marked the beginning of the general election cycle. But for Elad Gross, the Democratic candidate running to be Missouri's next attorney general, he's been focused on November since the beginning. That's because Gross did not have an opponent in the primary, which left him waiting to see who he would be up against in the general election. On this episode of Politically Speaking, Gross joins the show to talk about why he decided to run again for attorney general after losing the primary in 2020, the role he feels the attorney general should play in Missourians' lives, and his vision for the office. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
My promise to St. Louis was that I would do the absolute most for each and every person, starting with those who have the very least.
What I wanted to do was look and see what other states are doing.
We have to be willing to change those laws, that they are balanced and they affect everybody equally.
As somebody that grew up in the St. Louis area, in North St. Louis County, I didn't know any lawyers growing up.
We got to find long-term solutions to make government better, but also to be able to provide services to people.
I don't want to leave that federal money that we've been leaving all these years on the table.
We need to be spending this money to take care of Missourians.
I thought we accomplished a lot this year, but a lot more needs to be done.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, St. Louis Public Radio's Statehouse and politics reporter, Sarah Kellogg. Joining me via Zoom, he is St. Louis Public Radio's political correspondent,
Jason Rosenbaum.
And joining me in the studio today in St. Louis, I'm mixing up the locale, he is a Democrat running to be Missouri's next attorney general.
Elad Gross.
Welcome back to the show. We're super excited to have you. And I know that you have been on the show before, but for our listeners who might be learning more about you, as you know, with your candidacy, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became to be involved with Missouri politics.
Yeah, no, happy to be back. Well, I actually got involved. That's a great question. I got involved in Missouri politics. That's a long time ago. So I used to work and still do. I do a lot of work with kids in St. Louis City. And the first state representative I ever met was Michael Butler in the Hyde Park neighborhood on the north side while I was working over at Clay Elementary. And so that's how I met my first real-life politician. But, you know, I'd volunteered, I guess, for some presidential campaigns before. But that was, I think, my first real involvement in local politics, seeing how much of an influence that has on their daily lives. And so education was really my path to getting involved politically in the first place, because I think every kid deserves real opportunity in Missouri.
You ran for attorney general in 2020, where you lost in the primary election. Why did you decide to run again?
Well, that was part my wife who was like, you got to go do that right now because we're really screwed up here in Missouri. And two, you know, I wasn't so sure. So when I started the campaign, I actually started as an exploratory campaign. A lot of folks were asking me to run. My right knee is in really bad shape and it was hurting a lot. And I knew my car was going to break down. So I said, all right, if you guys really want this, let's do it. Here's how many volunteers. Here's how much money we have to raise realistically. And they did it immediately. So my car did break down. I'm now in a new truck actually built right here in Missouri over in the Wentzville plant by the UAW. It's wonderful. My knee is not so wonderful, though. So that is a sacrifice I've taken for the team here.
What have you learned since that first experience of running for the position?
I learned a lot, actually. So I got to travel around the state. I'd been doing that before. So I used to be an assistant attorney general in Missouri. I got to travel a lot already for cases I was working on. But in this situation, I saw more of the political side of everything. And I saw how much organization I think the Missouri Democratic Party needed. And a lot of the strength that we needed to infuse in the organization itself. So I've helped folks really rebuild a lot of the communities that we've had around the state, around what the Democratic Party can and should be doing for folks. And I think, you know, I'm really proud of the leadership that we've taken in doing that. But I think I learned a lot about how do we strengthen local communities to take care of themselves and then build something that's bigger than any of us can do on our own.
What in your background, your experience, drew you to the attorney general's race as opposed to running for the legislature or a local office?
I live in St. Louis City. I'm pretty good. So when we talk about the legislature, I've got, you know, good representatives there. You know, I've had some legal fights with St. Louis City that have been, pretty high profile, I suppose. But that's part of my legal work right now. For the attorney general's office, like I said, I used to work there. And I saw what that office can do for so many people in Missouri. And it is something that, you know, I think with the right leadership there, we can do so much more for people in this state. We can sue these scammers on our phones that are always out there. We can deal with violence in our communities. We can make our neighborhoods safer. We can have a real advocate for the people of Missouri in that office. And so I guess having worked there and seen all of the wonderful folks who are choosing to be there instead of, you know, some big law firm somewhere where they're making a whole lot of money. It can be a great place to work. It can be a great place to get a lot of work done for Missourians, and that's why I'm running for attorney general.
As I'm sure you know, in Missouri right now, it is an uphill battle for a Democrat to win statewide. The last statewide victory for Democrats was in 2018 when Nicole Galloway defeated Sandra McDowell. Mm-hmm. Why do you believe that you can not only represent Missourians, but also be elected by them, given that you have to piece together a different type of coalition than Republicans have to do in terms of a statewide electorate?
Yeah, I mean, like, look, you can look at this race right now, and I'm out there talking to as many people as possible, trying to participate in debates and forums, and the current attorney general doesn't answer anybody. I think he feels very strong in his position by virtue of the electoral politics and the history of it here in Missouri. But look, I've been invited, for example, to Trump headquarters in Warsaw, Missouri. I've been there multiple times now talking to folks. And when I talk to people there and I talk to people in St. Louis, we want the same things. We want drinkable water. We want someone to sue the scammers on our phones. Puppy mills is a big issue throughout Missouri, too. And a lot of folks are agreeing, and maybe they just like my dog better than me. I mean, I like my dog better than me sometimes. But I think that there's so much commonality that we have. The big challenge for us is how do we reach as many people as possible? Because when I get in front of Republicans or conservative folks, I talk about how much money has been wasted in that office, all these stupid lawsuits coming from there, locking up innocent people behind bars, and we're all paying for that. I mean, there's a lot of really, really bad policy coming from that office. And so I think if we're able to have those conversations with as many people as possible, we're going to see success. And right now, I'm very proud to say this, we are the statewide campaign that is contacting voters. We have a whole operation around the state. We have regional organizers. We have thousands of volunteers in the campaign. We are the only ones right now that are really, you know, phone banks, text banks, contacting folks right now. And, I mean, maybe after they hear the show, they're going to start waking up a little bit. But I think there's a lot of folks sleeping on our campaign right now. And our intent is to show them a thing or two in November.
So let's get into the issues. And the first thing that we want to talk about is sunshine law policy.
Oh, I know about that.
Oh, well, I'm sure you do, because you were part of a high profile lawsuit in I think 2020, 2021. Can you, for our listeners who are unfamiliar with this lawsuit, kind of explain this particular case and what was at stake?
Yeah, well, so that lawsuit actually started in 2018. It was after there was this guy, he was governor from Missouri for like 2 minutes, named Eric Greitens, and he decided to do
really?
We've
forgot that ever happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though Sarah and I were both there, but continue.
I bet. Look, it wasn't very long, so the memories from that, you know, hopefully we've erased them at this point. But that guy decided that he wanted to start this what's called dark money, this operation to basically launder political donations so you can't see who the original donor is. And he was very well known for that. So after he resigned in disgrace, I guess while the U-Haul truck was coming to get it, because he took like a week before he got out of the mansion. But I was wondering why everybody was dropping these investigations, especially into this dark money operation that he had. So I started asking for records, went to court several times, actually, and the records request ended up going to the governor's office. And they said, oh, yeah, we do have a bunch of records responsive to your request about communications with all of these people involved in this dark money operation from the governor's office. But we're not going to just give you those records. We're going to charge you over $3,600, and you're going to have to wait at least half a year. And I said, well, that's not how the Sunshine Law works. And they said, well, go ahead and sue us. So went to the attorney general, never got a response because the attorney general is supposed to enforce the Sunshine Law. And I ended up taking it to court on my own. And in 2021, the case went to Missouri Supreme Court. I argued it there, actually against one of my former supervisors at the attorney general's office. And I won that case unanimously. It was a 6-0 decision because one of the judges actually retired. And yeah, that was the Gross v. Parson case. I'm the gross guy on that one, but it upheld our right to see public records, participate in public meetings, and not be charged an arm and a leg in order to see the records that belong to us. Amazingly, that case today, it's 2024, is still ongoing because it went back to the trial court level. And it just goes to show you how complicated these cases can be, how hard it is if you're not an attorney like me to uphold your own rights. I'm fortunate that Capital One hasn't cut me off quite yet, and I can afford to do that. But a lot of folks can't, and that's why the attorney general plays such an important role in Sunshine Law enforcement.
So this is kind of staying on the same subject, but maybe in a different direction. In 2018 or after 2018, legislative emails became open to Sunshine Law requests. And that was great for reporters like us. But I think that some lawmakers expressed a legitimate concern, even if it was being done in bad faith, that it opened up potentially constituent identifying information like addresses, phone numbers, et cetera, to potentially bad actors. So how do you kind of balance the like desire to enforce the Sunshine Law to the letter of the law while also being respectful to non-political participant information that could come from Sunshine Law requests? I'm not talking about lobbyists. I'm not talking about like legislative staff or legislators themselves. I'm just talking about like people writing to the government and you know, possibly exposing identifying information
100% to public. Yeah, absolutely. 100% agree. I've actually testified on this at the state Senate. So there have been efforts since my case and the decision to change Missouri Sunshine Law to reverse the Gross v. Parson ruling. And that, I mean, that would do major damage to transparency in Missouri. It's not like they're just trying to protect constituent information. They're just trying to allow the government to charge us an arm and a leg to prevent us from seeing public records. So I've been in the Senate. I've actually testified in favor of some of those restrictions you mentioned there. I think that if you're sending very private, personal, confidential information to a state representative because you're trying to get services that way, I don't think that the public should see that. I think that that's part of yeah, I mean, protecting our basic privacy. And I think, you know, overall, I think we need a lot more privacy protections coming from the attorney general's office as well, especially when we're talking about beyond our legislature, tech and healthcare and all of this big data that's out there as well. But I would say I think the law needs to be altered a bit. I think we can do both. I think, one, we can protect personal private information from being shared publicly. And then I think we can also modernize our Sunshine Law by saying these public records, you shouldn't have to go through this whole long process in order to get them. You shouldn't have to be charged an arm and a leg to get them. Let's put them online. It's 2024, folks. Like, we've got the internet. So let's get this stuff out there so the public can access it more readily. And I'm very open to modernizing our Sunshine Law, protecting that private information. I would say for any legislator, any folks, really staff members, too, who are working there, I know this is an attorney. Oftentimes we get some information by email. We tell folks this isn't the most secure way to do this, but probably putting some kind of a warning telling folks, at least right now, don't share this information by email. Let's set up some kind of a meeting or something else to go over that private information. But I do think that the Sunshine Law should be changed to protect that information.
We need to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see Time is of the essence.
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.
And we're back on Politically Speaking. Our guest today is the Democratic nominee for Attorney General in Missouri, Elad Gross. Let's get into policy. We did a little bit more. Let's really get into it. And so we'll start with, what do you believe are the main responsibilities of being Attorney General?
Well, the Attorney General should be the attorney for the people of Missouri. And that means advocating for their positions, protecting folks, and enforcing the law. And in a big part of that right now, the number one complaint that comes to the Attorney General's office every year, scam calls. Every single year. I'm like, it's not even close. So we started, Missouri invented the do not call list. A lot of folks don't know that, but Jay Nixon as Attorney General started that, was enabled by legislation. I know Jerry Howard and the boot heel worked very hard on that as well. But that was Missouri. And then the federal government said, wow, what a great idea. We're going to take that from you and do it too. And you wouldn't know that now, that Missouri was the one that started that, given all of these calls that are coming through all the time. I think that we need a much stronger investment in our consumer protection division at the Attorney General's office. And that doesn't mean more money. That's a division that brings money to our state. It just means we need more attention spent there. We need more staff there. We need to fully staff the Consumer Protection Division. But there's plenty of other things that that office should be doing. We should have a coordinated statewide plan to deal with violence in our communities. We should have a civil rights division at the Attorney General's office. We should better serve our veterans. We should be dealing with health care issues throughout Missouri. We should be stopping fraud. There's just so many things that that office should be doing, but primarily that office should be a watchdog for the people and should be the representative for the people of the state of Missouri and the legal side of things.
Yeah, let's talk more about scammers and kind of going after scam calls. I'm sure that's something that affects pretty much every Missourian.
Yeah.
What are your detailed plans on that, including, you know, an enforcing mechanism?
Yeah. So we have to have staff there to enforce the do not call list. That has to happen. We have to make sure that when folks are calling the Attorney General, like, you're not just getting something that rings forever. Maybe you get to a voicemail. Maybe you finally get to a live person, but then that person doesn't do anything for you. We have to have enough staff to do the job of the Attorney General's office, and currently we do not. So one is certainly bringing up staffing levels. I think that we also need, if you don't stay ahead of the technology in this area, you fall behind really quickly. And so we haven't done that. I mean, we don't have an Attorney General who's doing that right now. I want to start the Missouri Attorney General app, as long as that acronym isn't trademarked by a former president. And that app would allow you, if you're getting scammed, right, by email, phone, text, whatever it is, you can send that information directly to the Attorney General's office. We're collecting evidence as it's happening. It streamlines those prosecutions, and we can send warnings out to the public about the new scams that are out there. So I think it becomes a much more interactive way for folks to be a part of their government as well.
Okay, so I had a question on that. So it feels like, in part, enforcing this does maybe involve cooperation with the public.
Sure.
Not everyone's going to download an app,
you
know, kind of how do you intend to kind of reach out and get folks involved and to collaborate with them? Because that is going to be necessary.
Yeah. And that's true with any kind of law enforcement. You need participation from the public, especially when the public is the victim of a lot of this stuff. So, yeah, not everybody's going to want to download an app. Not everybody's going to want to send that over. Some people would prefer to do that online through a website. So that's fine. Like, we'll have different ways to do that. Some folks will want to call in. They'll want to send an email. All of those options will be available too, and maybe they want a newsletter instead of an app telling them what the warnings are. We will have all of those different options available for folks. But what I think that the Attorney General should do is, I think the Attorney General should be holding regular town halls throughout the state of Missouri. And that way we're getting folks input. You're learning what the Attorney General's office does. You're seeing how it can impact your life, ways that you can participate in your own government as well. But right now, we don't really see that happen. You see, I think most folks actually don't know who the Attorney General is or what the Attorney General does, which is really sad because it does a whole lot for us and it should be doing a whole lot more. So I think we should see the Attorney General more than just every 4 years during election season. I think that that person should be someone that we know. And look, I mean, it's a big red flag if you don't know the name of your attorney. And that's true in your personal life, okay? So if you don't know the name of your attorney general, you haven't had an opportunity to meet that person, you don't know what that person is doing for you, that's a big red flag, and you probably want to consider getting a new one.
I want to stay on the topic of the do not call list, and I actually want to shift it to the do not text list, which I'm sure doesn't exist. What would your office be able to do about scam texts?
Yeah.
Because there has been an epidemic of people getting these random texts from random people, and it's clearly with the hope that people respond, and they, the people that are being texted give the texter some sort of money. Yes. Is there any way to stop this, in your opinion?
Yes, yes, there is. Well, so I got one of those this morning, Jason, actually, on the way over. They told me that I was the talent they were looking for. Please respond. I'm like, I don't know what that means. I have no idea. But thank you, I guess. Yeah, so I think, one, we do have some rules around that right now. A lot of that's coming on the federal side of things. So if you say stop or unsubscribe, all of those things, you're not supposed to be doing that. I think we need to advocate for stronger federal protections. And that's one role of the attorney general as well. I mean, you are in charge of consumer protection for the state of Missouri. You should also be in D.C. saying, hey, here's what we need. And I think, you know, I'd rather spend all my time here in Missouri, but every once in a while you got to go over there and tell them what we need as well. So I think that's important. But we nothing's really stopping us from passing some laws here in Missouri about that as well, to strengthen those consumer protections here too. But, you know, it depends on where what the source of these is. We do have the Missouri Merchandising Practices Act, which is our consumer protection law. It is pretty broad, and I think that we do need to enforce it a lot, you know, maybe more in depth and have a lot stronger enforcement on that against some of these folks. One really scary thing that's happening right now is AI, too, and we are way behind. Actually, there's this WashU professor who is inventing some defenses to AI stealing people's voices from their voicemails. It only takes 2 seconds for folks to start copying those voices. But, you know, we do have the technology to combat this. And I think that we need to start deploying that. And the attorney general should be really the leader in doing that, because you are at the forefront of consumer protections in each of the states.
So another part of your campaign is in policies surrounding puppy mills. I'd love for you to talk kind of about some of those policies and what you would do.
Yeah. So, well, Liberty Bell, my little puppy mill rescue dog, she is way more popular than me. Missouri is the puppy capital of the country. We have been that way for over a decade. A decade ago, we actually went to the polls. We voted to heavily restrict these facilities in Missouri. Unfortunately, unlike a lot of the things that are on our ballot now, and this is a reason actually why a lot of the things that we put on the ballot now are amendments to the state constitution rather than propositions, which are just like laws. The reason being is it's harder to change an amendment. It's really easy for the legislature to change a proposition. So we had a proposition that changed the law on puppy mills. It made it much harder for folks to abuse dogs, to put so many in one facility, banned wire cages where dogs would get their paws stuck and then broken when they get pulled out. That's what we think happened to Liberty Bell, because she's got a very bad arm that's broken and she won't be able to walk on it anymore. Some places in Missouri right now, they cut vocal cords of the dogs because they're in residential areas and they don't want folks to hear how many dogs they have in one facility. So the legislature overturned what we voted on. We've had a huge problem ever since regulating these things, and enforcement comes through the attorney general's office. And some attorneys general, they deal with this, and other ones don't. Maybe that's because they can't staff the office or whatever else it might be, but it's not a priority right now at that office. So that's something I think we need to increase enforcement. We need to increase our partnerships with federal inspectors, because we've got federal inspectors and local inspectors. The local state ones, as you can imagine, if the legislature is hostile to this already, they don't really fund them very well. But the federal ones are funded separately from what the state is doing. So I think we need to increase those partnerships. We need to increase education. And like I said, I mean, this is becoming a theme a little bit here, but I think the attorney general should really be a partner for our local communities and should be working with the people of Missouri a whole lot more, too. And that would really address a lot of this problem as well.
I want to shift to your plans to prevent and reduce violence in the state. Mm-hmm. What can you do without legislative input and laws?
Yeah, there's a lot. So the attorney general can do a whole lot without changing a bunch of the laws in Missouri. I'm sure there's plenty that do need to be changed. But outside of that, the attorney general should start a coordinated effort to reduce violent crime throughout the state of Missouri. Right now, the attorney general has the ability to work with local prosecutors. A lot of prosecutors are very overloaded. We see that here in St. Louis. And I think that we, as the attorney general's office, should be reaching out to those local prosecutors to say, how can we help? There's a whole public safety division at the attorney general's office designed to do just that. So that's one, is we have to make sure that folks know what the expectations are. We don't want violence. We don't want violent crime. Do not commit this. It won't be good for you if you do. And then those expectations have to turn into reality. Prosecutions are important. However, by the time we're prosecuting somebody, someone has already been severely injured. They're dead. A family has been broken apart. I had a kiddo of mine who is a student of mine who was shot and killed in the Hyde Park neighborhood right down the street from the school that I was working at with the representative. And he was supposed to start first grade the next day, like literally the next day. He was in his backyard. His two sisters were there. His family comes out, watches him die. His police are trying to rush him over to the hospital. All of those people are now going to be forever impacted by that. And if we're not working to prevent violence in the first place, we don't have a real plan to address violence. And that's what we have, right? We don't have that right now in Missouri. So in places that we've seen massive reductions in violence, there's a lot of great examples in our country. There's a lot of great examples throughout the world where they've done it. There's been, on the one end, prosecutions and resources for that, resources for law enforcement. But on the other end, there's been you want to divert people from making that choice in the first place. And if that means you need to help folks with housing, education, other resources, we have got to get that done. And it has to be a concerted effort. The attorney general's office is the best place to put it.
A policy you've listed under that is targeting illegally possessed firearms. How would you go about doing that, especially because, you know, I'm presuming that would have a lack of backup from lawmakers in Jefferson City?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think that folks really do agree on that. Folks who should not be possessing firearms should not be possessing them. And there's a lot of legal restrictions right now. There are folks, unfortunately, in areas with high violence, there's a proliferation of guns out there. Heck, I mean, I've known kids who have been able to get weapons, firearms, at the age of 15 and 16. And they don't know what they're doing. They're just firing them off. They think that they're protecting themselves. Maybe they think it's the cool thing to do. I don't know. But there's a lot of bad decisions that lead up to that process. So I think there might be some folks who are out there and saying, oh, well, we're never going to do anything if you mention the word firearms. But the vast majority of folks, and we've got a lot of law enforcement folks who are in our state legislature as well, understand that violence, this kind of violence, is committed by a very small segment of the population. And a lot of it is driven by the illegal possession of firearms. Now, I think we're even at about 50, almost over 50% of these firearms are stolen from people's vehicles. And we have a big problem with those being unsecured in a lot of our areas right now. So I think that's a problem that we can tackle and we need to in Missouri.
I want to talk about a number of things that the current attorney general has done during his tenure and get your responses to it. What do you make of Attorney General Bailey's effort to oust Kim Gardner as circuit attorney? Do you think he made the right call, given how it came to light how dysfunctional the office became under her watch?
Yeah, I had a lot of problems with Kim Gardner's office. I was actually involved in a lot of litigation with her well before Andrew Bailey did anything. That was because just the dysfunction in that office led to innocent people being kept in jail when they weren't supposed to be there. And I've litigated many of those cases, unfortunately, involving the city. So I was not the biggest fan of her tenure there. I was very hopeful, it didn't work. I'm very glad we've got Gabe Gore in there right now, who has stabilized the office, has done a really good job so far. I think there's a lot more that we have to do, and that's a role that the attorney general should play. I think what if I was in his shoes, Andrew Bailey's shoes, then my first step wouldn't have been going to a TV camera to get on the news. My first visit would have been to Kim Gardner's office, and I would have sat there downtown St. Louis until she met with me or a staff member met with me and said, I'm going to send prosecutors to your office. How can we best help you do that? There was so much time wasted over trying to get on the news and you know, trying to litigate this whole thing. Yeah, maybe you have to do that at the same time if you're not getting any participation whatsoever. But there were people dying. There were people who were not being prosecuted as a result of all the delays in this process. And so I think that that first step should have been, how can we best help you do your job? How can we stabilize this office? That should, the priority should have been protecting people in Missouri. It shouldn't have been, let's make this onto the news. And that's my view on that topic. But yeah, I had a number of cases involving her office and was highly disappointed with the management of it, both as an attorney representing folks, but also as someone who is a city resident.
One of the most controversial things that he undertook last year were these emergency rules that not only would have severely restricted hormone therapy and puberty blockers for transgender minors, but also hormone therapy and gender transition surgery for transgender adults. Mm-hmm. Now, as I'm sure you recall, these rules were struck down and he ended up, you know, not pursuing them after the legislature passed the ban on gender affirming care for minors. I'm going to take a wild guess and say you probably wouldn't have pursued this, but can you just to play like devil's advocate, why do you think he was wrong to pursue those rules the way he did?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, I wasn't the only one who thought he was wrong. Governor Parson thought he was wrong. Even Jay Ashcroft thought he was wrong. A lot of folks really opposed what he was doing, and he wasn't hiding it. So he tried to use a lot of consumer protection laws in a very expansive way. And this is a guy who's done this with many things. He did this with the initiative petition, where he expanded his authority well beyond his own office, well beyond what our state constitution said, to the point that the state auditor, Scott Fitzpatrick, had to go to court and disagree with this guy, too. And he had multiple judges tell him, you need to do your job, not everybody else's. There's limited government for a reason. I'm a small government guy. I think to the extent possible, we should let people make their own individual decisions, let your family make your own individual decisions, and the government should stay out of that. The way that this guy did it was he tried to expand Missouri's Merchandising Practices Act to say that he can tell anybody to do anything that he wants them to do. The legislature is the appropriate way to go through this, and then the court system after that to see if those laws are right or wrong. He didn't care about our process. He didn't care about separation of powers. He didn't care that his authority is supposed to be limited in a lot of these areas. He really did abuse his office and his power in doing that. And if he can do it for that issue, he can do it for a whole lot of others. And that's what gets really scary, because he has done it with a whole lot of others. He has attempted to deny the people of Missouri the right to access the initiative petition, the right to access the ballot. And if he starts taking away, and now, I mean, he's doing it in prisons. He's taking away people's right to have their freedom. And if he can deny people all of these basic civil liberties in Missouri, and we're getting that from the attorney general, we're going to have a major problem in Missouri. And we have for the last few years with this guy.
You mentioned this kind of in the beginning of the show, but the whole concept of how the AG approaches wrongful conviction cases.
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of time reporting on the Lamar Johnson situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I came away from it being like, this, the evidence is not even close to justifying keeping him in prison. Like, it wasn't even a close call.
Yeah.
But I do know that AG Schmidt's office faced a lot of criticism for basically aggressively combating any efforts to release him from prison. And I think that A.G. Bailey has faced similar criticism. To play devil's advocate, though, mm-hmm. I do kind of understand the approach of the A.G. acting as a check against the possibility that somebody who was actually convicted of a crime they actually committed was perpetrating like very elaborate scheme to prove their innocence. And, you know, the A.G. has to be a barrier against that possibility, however remote. So how would you kind of approach these cases differently, where you are not necessarily taking claims of wrongful conviction at face value, but you're not being so intransigent that you are preventing somebody from being released from prison when they didn't commit the crime. In the, like for in the case of Lamar Johnson, for example.
Right. Yeah. Lamar Johnson or Chris Dunn or Sandra Hemme. I mean, there's a whole list of folks that this has happened to in, very recently as well. I think one. So we have to understand this is part of a longer process. When you are prosecuted, after there's a conviction, you have the ability to appeal that conviction. A lot of folks do. All of those appeals go to the Attorney General's office. And in my view, that is one level of checking. I think that the Attorney General should make sure that our justice system works, right? It shouldn't just be, oh, let's uphold finality. I know we've had, and this is coming from a Democrat too. We had a Democratic Attorney General. At one point, they were arguing that we should execute someone even though the person was innocent. Because there was no other, you know, law stopping that. I think that these are horrendous arguments. Heck, I mean, right now we've got the Attorney General, somebody who's on death row, saying that he should have been executed before we hear the new DNA evidence in court. I mean, it's just like wild, wild ideas about our justice system. And then we wonder why so many folks don't trust it and why so many folks don't want to participate. And if we don't have public participation in our justice system, we're not going to have a justice system. It's not going to function. So I think that's a major problem. But the first step is after conviction, the criminal appeal goes to the Attorney General's office. The Attorney General's office deals with all of those. So that's one check in that process already, but that's one step towards saying, well, let's make sure that we've got a real conviction here and we're upholding that. Then that would go from one appellate court, could go up to the Missouri Supreme Court in some situations as well. And now you've got these folks now, these innocence cases, where it's not that they can bring it on their own. It's a prosecutor who said, hey, I think we screwed up. And they take oftentimes in some of these cases years before they decide to go forward and say, we're going to go to court. And the law now allows us to prove by clear and convincing evidence, one of the highest standards that we have in our legal system, that they have to go to court and the judge has to find by clear and convincing evidence that this person should not be in prison. And that's a prosecutor who is bringing that. So I guess, yeah, maybe in this system, maybe you could have a prosecutor who says, well, you know, I'm just going to release everyone no matter what. I don't care. And I'm going to bring it. And then maybe you have judges who just agree. I don't know. I don't know where you would have
that
happening.
Yeah, I mean, this is like here. Not to interject. I don't think this would happen.
Yeah.
But like I'm going to give the wackiest of hypotheticals.
Okay, let's do it.
Let's say somebody was convicted of a crime and they're very wealthy and they have like a wealthy brother and the wealthy brother bribes the prosecutor to try to release them from prison.
Sure.
That's kind of what I was talking about where the AG has to act as a check against those type of admittingly unlikely scenarios.
Yes.
But I would not want a situation where somebody is working or colluding with a disreputable prosecutor to try to release somebody from prison.
Right.
And the AG just takes it at face value and like releases them.
Absolutely.
That's why I think that's why you have to have an Attorney General's office sometimes be aggressive when it may seem like they're being like heartless or dispassionate about somebody's plea, but continue.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And then the next step in that whole process there is to also remove the prosecutor for accepting a bribe from somebody, right? So you're in like the extreme territory, not the norm. So the norm right now is you've got prosecutors who are overloaded, who have looked at this case and feel so much that they have to take time out of all the other cases they have to say, oh my goodness, let's let this guy out. So that's our current system. So yeah, maybe you'll see somewhere along the line there's corruption. That's why I think we should have a public corruption unit at the Attorney General's office, someone who you can specialize in quo warranto actions to remove folks when they're not doing their jobs and they're doing something illegal. But I mean, the cases that we have now are people who've spent decades and decades of their lives behind bars for crimes that they have proven themselves innocent. It's not like, oh, you know, this, that. It's just, no, look at all the evidence and I shouldn't be here. And our Attorney General not only is fighting those cases to say, oh, the other side is being represented, but it is then calling prison wardens and telling them to ignore court orders and keep people there, even with threats of contempt right now. Somebody's got to hold this guy accountable. It's absolutely ridiculous what he has done. He's spending taxpayer money to keep innocent innocent people behind bars beyond just the initial hearing. There is no authorization for him to appeal these cases, even though he's trying. And, you know, I guess we'll find out soon, because now that's going to be up at the Supreme Court at some point, too. But he has totally mismanaged our system of justice in the state of Missouri. And it is really sad for somebody. I mean, I've worked with kids for a long time in very poor areas of our state. I've worked with families that have been scared to come forward to law enforcement when they see something because they don't think anybody's going to do anything for them. And when you have a guy like this, who is the chief law enforcement officer of our state, screwing around so much that folks don't even believe that we'll ever see real justice in our state as a result of that, and we're getting national, terrible national attention for this. I mean, come on. Like, we've got to change something, and that is not the role of the role of the attorney general is to make sure our justice system is working, not to do whatever this guy is doing with our taxpayer money right now. So it's extremely frustrating for me as somebody who's seen kids who don't trust our system of government. And if our kids don't do it, if the future doesn't do it, we won't have it. And folks just won't respect it. And we're going to be in a very bad situation here in Missouri. And we need to change that as soon as we possibly can.
That's all the time we have. Thank you so much for joining us on the show this morning. Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is a part of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. You can follow all of our coverage, election and beyond, at stlpr.org. And Elad Gross, where can people find you on the internet, learn more about your campaign, and find you where you want to be found?
You can find me everywhere. But yeah, if you go to eladgross.org, that's eladgross.org, you'll find it all right there.
All right, until next time, so long.
Politically Speaking is produced by Jason Rosenbaum, Rachel Lippman, and me, Sarah Kellogg. The show is edited by Fred Ehrlich. Read all of our coverage at stlpr.org. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Politically Speaking by searching the term Politically Speaking on Apple Podcasts.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.